Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Boom Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zachie and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. It is episode 242, Brian.
Wow, 242.
That is nuts. I am Zachie Hassan. That voice you just heard, that was Brian Hall. And we're excited to be here.
Yeah, I am. We just, we're hot off the...
You don't have to laugh right when you say, yeah, it makes it sound
It's just funny. It's like, you know, my name's Brian and I'm happy to be here. You know, No, I was just going to say we're hot off the Dark Knight Rises commentary. I mean, that was... you know, a little peek behind the curtain. When it ended, we were both like, hey, we did it.
I lit up a cigarette, I don't mind saying.
Yeah, 2 hours, 44 minutes. I was pretty proud of that. And I got to say, I really had a great time going through that movie with you. And it's, I think, you know, that what we talked about was that movie just continues to rise in our estimation every time we view it. And that was maybe one of my favorite viewings.
This has been like, I've been just all Batman all the time for the last week.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
And I am loving every minute of it.
Oh man. You know what? And I can't wait to watch the Batman and talk about with you in about 2 weeks.
Eventually.
Yes. I am so sorry to sort of drop this here on the air this way, but yes, I actually tomorrow, I think it's like previews or whatever tomorrow. Right. And then it opens on Thursday or something.
That's right.
I'm flying to Paris tomorrow. So, Federica, my fiance, her family's over there. So we're going to go over to Paris, go visit her family. I'm going to go meet a bunch of people and it's going to be really awesome, but I don't know when I'm going to be able to get to go see the film. So maybe over there, I think it would be really cool to go. I've never been to France, so I think it'd be cool to see a movie over there, what that's like. But, I'm going to see it. And as soon as I do, you and I are going to talk about it.
Whenever that may be.
Yeah. Wasn't that, this happened around the holidays with The Matrix, I think it was, right?
Well, you went ahead and got COVID like a little bitch. I'm totally kidding. You know that. But
yeah, I did.
But it was so funny because it's like, hey, man, what are you watching Spider-Man? You're like, I got COVID. Yeah. I'm like, damn it. I'm not like, are you okay? Are you feeling better? I'm like, but the show, Brian, the show.
No, but see, the thing was, is, and it's going to be the case for this also, is you saw that movie so early that you were like, at long last, we can finally talk about this. And then, yeah, I had to like kick the can down the road. And I really do feel bad, but my anticipation, I mean, is through the roof. This was one of those ones. I mean, if people remember the trailer, I was like, yeah, it looks kind of dark. I mean, it looks cool. I hope it's something, you know, that stands out. I enjoy and proves that this was the version worth telling here. And with each trailer, I've been getting more and more excited and then hearing people are really enjoying it and hearing the score. I don't know. I mean, that's been working for me, dropping all the, you know, some of the themes on YouTube. And now I'm just like, I'm ready. So
I have been listening to the soundtrack for the last several days.
Yeah.
And Michael Giacchino, man, he's really done something interesting.
Man, I heard his Riddler theme, which it is on YouTube, or was. I'm sure the whole thing's out there now. But I was just surprised how big it was.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't, I mean, scores just, it felt sort of old school. Not Danny Elfman as kooky as Danny Elfman, but sort of as, oh, I'm going to use that word again. I forgot who brought it up, but bombastic. You're my Uncharted unhinged thing. But... but it was big. And I like that. So I'm looking forward to it.
There's a definite Danny Elfman influence in his score, but it's also very Giacchino.
Sure. Right.
And I kind of like that. I do. We've talked about this before that I think for at least for the two of us, like the Elfman Batman theme will always sort of be.
Yeah.
Like slot one, you know, but even still, there's so many different Batman themes you can have that all sound like Batman.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to add this to my rotation, you know.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I have many thoughts about the film, which I will be speaking into my wall.
Yeah.
I'll be podcasting to myself. Yeah. for the next couple of weeks. I am looking forward to rewatching it. I'm going to see it as we record this. It's the night before it opens mm-hmm. for everybody. So I'm planning to watch it with the kids. You know.
Yeah.
This is, by the way, this is not a movie for kitty kids.
Yeah, I'm getting 7 vibes just from the trailer, right?
Yes.
So I don't know how much it delivers on the actual. You know, I mean, like the visuals at the very least, but I don't know how grim it is. But
it really is. I mean, I heavy 7/Zodiac. Hmm. I mean, it's all David Fincher vibes. You know, just throw Batman in there. But actually, I'm currently with my second kid. I've been watching some of the animated movies.
Mm, yeah.
That DC has done lately. And for anybody listening who maybe wants either to watch something in the lead up or you're in the mood for something similar in the lead out, I would say Batman Year One, the animated movie, which stars Bryan Cranston as Jim Gordon and Ben McKenzie as Batman.
Okay.
And The Long Halloween, which is a 2-part movie based on the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale series. Which that stars Jensen Ackles as Batman. Very like definitely of a piece with this new movie.
Mm.
And the new film is very much indebted to both of those in different ways.
Okay. I've read both of those. I haven't seen the films though. Let's check those out.
I reviewed Batman The Long Halloween for IGN, and what I said, like the 2 parts, because it's each part is about 1.5 hours, so you're looking at about a 3-hour, roughly it's like The Batman, right?
Oh, wow.
What I said in my review, I was like, this together is like one of the best Batman movies I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So highly, highly recommend. For anybody listening, again, you're kind of, you're in the mood for something in that vein. There you go.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. But what else? What non-Batman content have you been consuming?
Well, this was a little while back, and I wanted to mention it because I thought it was worth it. But on HBO Max, I watched this movie called Kimmy, K-I-M-I. Mm-hmm. And IMDb says it's about an agoraphobic Seattle tech worker who uncovers evidence of a crime. And I guess what makes this a bit more notable than just a film dropping on streaming is this is from Steven Soderbergh, which is kind of interesting. And it stars Zoe Kravitz. And it's on HBO Max right now. And I thought this was just like a cool, quick little thriller. It's I think under 90 minutes. I mean, it might be 90 minutes soaking wet, but it's kind of like a 21st century Rear Window. And I mean, whereas, you know, Kravitz's character is agoraphobic, it also kind of, it doesn't hide the fact that it takes place during COVID. So when people go out, they wear masks and there's sort of allusions to, you know, we've been inside and having to watch people out our windows for so long, been isolated a little bit. And basically it's sort of Amazon's Alexa meets Rear Window. So, you know, she listens to recordings that people, you know, when they give commands to Alexa, it's not Alexa, but the device, the Alexa stand-in. And if there's something that the machine doesn't understand, it gets reported to her and then she will correct whatever word it doesn't know or whatnot. But then she hears, you know, some nefarious activity and she's wants to try to help someone, but, you know, she has a hard time going outside of her apartment. And I just thought she does a great job. I don't know if I've really seen Zoe Kravitz in a lot of things. I mean, Mad mm-hmm. Max comes to mind, mm-hmm. but her as the lead in this, it really endeared me to her. I mean, she plays this character so well. And I mean, I have to imagine it's in the trailer. She eventually is forced to leave her apartment. And the way that Soderbergh captures how she feels is so simple, but it's so effective. I just felt so, I just wanted to help her, you know, and that's in the direction. And then let alone the performance she's giving and this little shuffle walk that she does and just these little details and the way she puts on like hand sanitizer and has this funny little ritual. And she just really came alive. I mean, it was a really, really great character and a really very slight. I mean, it's very simple, but it's, I don't know, just the perfect, you pop it on. Like I said, it's like 1 hour and 28 minutes. I thought it was like a fun little thriller. So if you have HBO Max, I'd recommend checking out Kimmy.
There we go. Yeah. So it was worth the Steven Soderbergh coming out of his latest retirement.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah. In HBO land, Zachy. You know what you brought up? I think it was off air, but you said you heard like a little portion of a commentary we did right when COVID started. And I said something to the effect of, well, I don't know. Now that we're like kind of trapped inside for a while, maybe I'll finally get around to watching The Wire. And I finished it this past week. Federica and I finished it.
Look at that.
And I got to say, man, you know, when I started, I was like, this is great. And it just gets better and better. And now that it's over, I'm like, I get it. Yep. Like, this is one of the greatest television series of all time. Like, mm-hmm. Period. It just is. Yep. And it's what an achievement. I mean, just the writing of this thing and what they aimed to do and they pulled off, and the just vast amounts of characters and how they have them interact with one another, but it's not just through contrivances, you know, it's pretty incredible. And when it was over, I got that feeling. I don't know if you get this, but like when you have sort of like a big book you've been reading, uh-huh. and when you're done, you're on that last page and you set it down and you almost feel like you're coming back to real life, you know, and you're like, man, I was living somewhere else for so long and now I'm coming back to the real world. And I honestly was feeling sad that I won't be spending time with these people or in that world any longer. So yeah, I mean, I can't say enough good things about it. It was interesting too. I mean, again, I'm talking about a show that's like 20 some years old, but I will say, just because, you know, for posterity.
Have you heard about this Idris Elba fella?
He's really good.
I see big things in his future.
He could really be something.
Mark my words.
Yeah. Which is funny because I first saw him on The Office.
That's right.
But anyway, I'll just say season 5 was interesting because, you know, I say it reminds me of a book, the show, because, you know, it's not always like perfectly plotted. I mean, it is probably on paper, but they make it feel very like real life and natural, and you spend quieter moments with people. And season 5, I was saying that Federica started to feel a little bit more like TV in terms of the hard plotting they were doing. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of curious about this. This feels a little bit different. And I think once it all wrapped up, I saw what it was all in service of, which was, you know, coming to as best a conclusion as a show like this can, because life is obviously going to go on.
Right.
It's not like they're solving some great mystery and then it's over, like Indiana Jones finds the Grail or something, you know? And I have to say, I was like, how are they going to end a show like this, you know, where life does go on? And I thought they nailed it. So yeah, I mean, even recapping some of it, just saying the things that I liked from the finale to Federica, I started getting a lump in my throat, just thinking of these characters and like my joy for them, my concern for them. I mean, when, you know, how often does a show or a film really consume you like that? And so I just, for the people who have seen it, they're probably just smiling and nodding. But for the people who haven't, I highly recommend it. It's one of those things that like sort of sits on the shelf, you know, that you're like, yeah, I'll get to that. You know, someday I'll read Ulysses, but I this is absolutely worth it. So switching gears from that a little bit, I don't know where this got into my head, but I was just really itching to show Federica Doc Hollywood.
Okay.
So when was the last time you watched Doc Hollywood?
Last time I watched Doc Hollywood, I was in Saudi Arabia. So it would have been 91 or 92 probably at the latest.
Wow. So I think that's when it came out, is 1991. So this is, you know, Michael J. Fox right after Back to the Future 3, you know, young Woody Harrelson, Bridget Fonda. It's, you know, it's funny. If you've seen Cars.
Cars is Doc Hollywood.
It's a very sort of similar tale, which is interesting too, by the way. I didn't realize Doc Hollywood was based on someone's like story.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sure it was, you know, embellished and reimagined, but yeah, I don't know. I just got in my head that I wanted to show this movie because I remembered it being really sweet, which is basically, you know, Michael J. Fox is on his way to Los Angeles to become a plastic surgeon and make a lot of money, and then he crashes his car in this small town, and to pay for the fence, he has to become the town doctor for like 48 hours, right? And then he meets a girl, falls in love with the town. And it was really sweet. I mean, I don't think I've seen it since the 90s either. But the main reason I bring it up is because I thought it was so interesting, the pace of this movie. It really struck me. It was very like patient with itself. Huh. You know, it wasn't trying, it didn't have these huge, like sort of grabby moments to pull you in. And I was even thinking about 20 minutes in, I was like, oh, I hope Federica's enjoying this. Like, you know, it's moving a little bit slower than I remembered. And it wasn't about like set pieces, you know, where people were falling over and, you know, things were falling down. Like it was really about a lot of interactions. And I was thinking, you know, if it was in black and white, you know, I could imagine it being a movie from like the 40s or 50s where it really was all about the dialogue and the relationships with one another. And you know, it's when it was over, it was like, it's not a revelation or anything, but it's like a super sweet, it's a little gem from the 90s. And it definitely scratched the itch I was hoping for it to scratch.
That movie is sort of a little stick pin in time, is the fact that Michael J. Fox was filming that when he first got his diagnosis.
Yes. Yes. Right. Which,
so I was associated with that.
Yeah. You gotta, you know, I didn't think much about it, but you gotta think that that's running through the back of his mind while he's doing this movie, you know? But dude, I mean, Michael J. Fox, man, like just one of a kind.
When you see him in his non Back to the Future films, you realize why he was a star above. Like, I mean, what I mean by that is like Back to the Future is just so baked in.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right. But like the fact he was just so charismatic and everything he still is.
Yeah.
But, at his peak, I mean, it's hard to encapsulate, you know?
Yeah. You know, and I had kind of forgotten that he even did, you know, Pepsi commercials, you know, where it was just like, it's Michael J. Fox. So he's having a hard time getting a Pepsi and you love it because it's Michael J. Fox, you know?
Right.
Like he does that good flustered thing really well. I mean, that's totally Marty, right? Like he has, this was a comment I saw actually in the Pepsi commercial. Basically this beautiful woman in his apartment building is like, hey, you know, I moved in, and he's like, you want to come in? She's like, yeah, do you have a Pepsi? And he realizes he doesn't. So he has to crawl out his window and he has to cross the street and he has to go through all this craziness to go get a Pepsi. And it's funny because in the commercial, he's dodging traffic, right? And it's like Marty in all three Back to the Future movies. And someone in the comments was like, man, it's so funny that Michael J. Fox has a recognizable car dodge. like that's a Michael J. Fox move, like cool, looking cool, but also like a little flustered while he's dodging cars.
That's really funny.
But yeah, I mean,
you know, what's funny is you're talking about Michael J. Fox. This is worth mentioning. I've been going through Spin City.
Oh, interesting. I've never seen that.
Yeah. You know, they have there's this Pluto TV. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
So they have all of Spin City on demand.
Hmm.
You know, and I loved that show when he was on it.
Yeah. In that era, I wasn't watching a lot of sitcoms. I mean, I've mentioned that I'm going through Friends right now, and that's kind of the same sort of thing. Like I just wasn't watching sitcoms. And as I go back and check some of these out, you know, I'm like, oh, well, these are really fun.
Yeah. Well, this show, I mean, it really was a showcase for everything he was good at, you know?
Mm.
And this is latter day Michael J. Fox. I mean, he came out with his diagnosis during that show.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then he left partway through. I think he did four seasons, I believe, on that show.
Okay.
And then there were two, he was replaced by Charlie Sheen and the quality dropped really fast. But like when he was on it, I thought it was great. He was so effortless, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you're in the mood for like Michael J. Fox content you've never seen before, I would recommend Spin City.
I think I am actually. Yeah. Watching this made me want to go revisit like Secret of My Success and a lot of those, you know, sorts of movies. I've never even seen Bright Lights, Big City. That's one
I've never seen that one either.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like R-rated Michael J. Fox. So when I was a kid,
it was the equivalent of when Lindsay Lohan did I Know Who Killed Me.
Brilliant. Just brilliant, Zachy. That's so good. That's so specific.
I remember when that came out, I was like, oh my God, Lindsay Lohan. She's playing like an exotic dancer or a high school student or both. I'm not sure, but it's rated R.
That's so funny. Which, oh, by the way, I forgot the way I was going to go into Doc Hollywood was like, hey, you know, I watched a movie from the director of Basic Instinct 2.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, I was just, before we hopped on, I was looking through his movies and I was like, what?
Yeah. Well, you know what else? It's Michael Caton Jones, I believe. Mm. He did Rob Roy.
Oh, wow. These are all wildly different.
And that's a movie that if you've not seen it, you've got a good movie waiting for you.
Really? Oh, dude. Oh, well, yeah. You know me and Neeson.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're going to like it.
Okay, okay.
Tim Roth is so good as the villain. Jessica Lange is in there. It's really good. That came out the same year as Braveheart. Yeah. And there's like a Venn diagram overlap in the middle, but Rob Roy kind of got like brushed aside a little bit, you know?
I didn't even realize they came out the same year, but I think of Rob Roy as not Braveheart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is a bummer, but
yeah, totally worth the, you got a good movie waiting for you.
Yeah, he did Memphis Belle. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, I remember
that. That was a good movie. Yeah. In my memory, it's been a while, but interesting. Okay. Anyway, what else? What else? Lastly, oh, okay. So we also watched Marry Me.
Oh, okay. The J Lo.
I don't know where I was going with that, but Marry Me.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, with Owen Wilson and Jennifer Lopez, which it's funny because it is simultaneously in theaters and it is also on Peacock. So we were sitting on the couch and we were like, do we feel like getting up? No. So we watched it on Peacock. But I got to admit, I was the one that actually brought this up because I thought the trailer was kind of funny. Like, I was like, that's a funny premise. I don't know. It's like Notting Hill, you know? And sure. Like basically, you know, some pop star is going to get married on stage to her equally famous pop star boyfriend. And he gets caught cheating and sees a man in the audience holding a marry me sign and says, I'll marry you instead. Which, by the way, I got to tell this really, really quick story because I know some people who listen to this watch Big Brother. That's one of my guilty pleasures is Big Brother. Right. And so several years ago, my good friend Chad, he's the one who got me into it. He actually got us into the finale. So we were in the live taping of the finale when the house guests come out, you know, and sit on stage. Uh-huh. And as we were walking in, you know, there are these popular characters or whatever you want to call them, participants. And so they gave Chad a sign that said, marry me, Jordan, huh. to you know, one of the woman who ended up in, you know, winning that year. And he's like, I don't, okay. So they just handed out these signs. So it would look like the audience was like huge fans of all these people and going crazy. And they made all these things. And so anyway.
It's so funny to me. Chad is a fan, yes, but he's not hold up a sign that says
I have a picture of it actually from TV. So anyway, he holds up the sign because he's like, all right, the camera's on us and everything. And then the house, oh, she won. This woman, Jordan, won. And he holds up the Marry Me, Jordan sign. And we both saw this. She was like squinting like, huh? What? She had this real look of like, what's happening? Like, who's that? Why is he proposing to me? Just slowly, like Charlie Brown style, just slowly puts the sign down. Like, yeah, I'm not holding that anymore. So, hey, maybe that was the inspo for Marry Me. I don't know, for whoever wrote this. But
that would be funny, by the way, wouldn't it? Like, just some cosmic thing, the screenwriter's like, you know, I was watching Big Brother. You're like, son of a gun.
Yeah. And he's like, I saw it go wrong, but I thought, what if... Right.
I saw some poor bastard holding up a sign that said, marry me, Jordan.
I would love if that was real. That would. But no, so yeah, I just thought it was a funny, cute premise. And I love Owen Wilson. I'm a sucker for Owen Wilson. When he hosts, I loved him in Loki. And when he hosted SNL, I just totally worked for me. Even the sketches that were bad, I'm like, yeah, but it's funny because it's Owen Wilson. You know,
because it's Owen Wilson, damn it.
I love Owen Wilson. So,
you know, Owen Wilson, by the way, he's in the movie Cars. I don't know if you.
Whoa. Wow. Which was a good sketch, by the way, right? Where he was reading.
Yes, that's right.
Like these inappropriate lines for Cars 4. And he's like, what's this movie about?
Like Lightning McQueen's getting Me Too'd and stuff. Yeah, right.
Like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just read it. But yeah, I'll just say, I mean, this movie's exactly what you think it yes. is.
It's J-Lo romantic comedy number 247/A.
100% with yeah. Owen Wilson, who I love. It's very light, but it's enjoyable. And I thought, though, this is why I especially wanted to bring up Doc Hollywood, was it's very different than Doc Hollywood, where, like I say, that one was a lot about the conversation and, wow, it ends up, you know, you didn't know it, but he's actually from a small town, too. You just assumed he was a big city guy. And you know, it's and this movie then is more about the set pieces. You know, it's like, what if pop stars in a classroom filled with kids and they're mathletes, but she teaches them to dance. And what if, you know, this guy who knows nothing about social media is at a social media photo shoot, you know, and it's not good or bad. It's just, oh, wow. It's like a very different style, right?
Yeah.
Like this, the events that occur were very different and the paces were very different. And it just struck me watching them so closely together. But yeah, I think you could do a lot worse than Marry Me. Like it's just fun. So.
Well, there, for those of you tuning in to hear our thoughts on the latest rom-coms and not latest rom-coms.
Yeah.
You know, rom-coms, I mean, of the last 30 years.
We've got to cover that. I mean, we don't do it often. We've got to broaden our scope here, and I'm here to do it.
You mentioned Notting Hill. I absolutely love Notting Hill. I think it's
great. Yeah.
I relate a lot to the Julia Roberts character in that movie. I don't even know.
That's not what I expected. I was like, yeah, elaborate.
You know, sometimes you just walk into a British bookstore and you fall in love with Hugh Grant. Don't judge me. Right. Don't judge me, Brian, with your judgy eyes.
I never would.
All right, let's take a short break and then we'll come back and I can tell you some of the stuff I've seen. And we are back, and here's something I've seen. We were talking about some of the Batman stuff we've been watching, and so I decided, just on a lark, I was staying in the DC Comics neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, I was home with my 10-year-old and my 8-year-old, and they were like, "We want to watch a superhero movie you haven't seen before." Mm. And so I said, "It's either Logan or Green Lantern."
For your 8-year-old,
it's definitely not Logan. But I was like, Green Lantern. Now here's a movie that came out in 2011.
I'll never forget it.
It was widely derided upon its release.
It really was. It really was. Now I'm dying to know. Well,
the first and last time I saw it was opening day 2011, June of 2011, and I was like, well, here we are. Let's give this a shot. And so I put it on, and after it ended, I was like, well, that's why it was widely derided.
Because really?
It's how you say not good.
Dude, okay, so this is from Martin Campbell.
Correct.
Who, when we revisited Casino Royale, which I hadn't seen in probably a decade or something, I was like, I think this might be one of the best action films of the 21st century.
Yes. And he also directed one of the worst superhero films of the 21st century. People contain multitudes, Brian.
I think we learned something here today.
It's funny because I posted about it on Twitter. I was like, hey, I haven't seen this in a while. Let's see how it goes. And a lot of people who are like, you know, I've always defended it. I've always liked it. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just didn't see it. Sorry. I think it is so desperately trying to be Iron Man. This is 3 years after Iron Man, right? So the math lines up where you can imagine that the Warner Brothers people were like, hey, you know, let's take a flawed character with a variety of personal problems and find a charismatic actor and, you know, have him play the superhero.
Right.
So it feels like Iron Man Mad Libs. And I'm somebody, by the way, who I love the character. I love Green Lantern. I love the concept. I love the mythology. I love all of it. And it really does feel like a mismatch of actor and character.
Interesting.
Yeah, because what you realize is just as Robert Downey was put on this earth to play Tony Stark,
mm-hmm.
Ryan Reynolds was put on this earth to play Deadpool.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing. I mean, he's been around for a really long time.
Yeah.
And I remember just Friends was maybe the first movie he popped for me.
Oh, yeah, with Amy Smart.
Yeah, and it suited him, right? Like he really was able to shine in that movie. But then when he kept popping up, it just didn't quite feel right for some reason. And this past weekend, we watched more than half of Free Guy on HBO. And I remember having the thought, like, he did it. Like, he found the fit. You know, he really locked in who he is, and now he is able to make movies, to build movies around himself.
Absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
Where he can shine.
Yeah.
So that's interesting that this was him. Yeah, maybe just being a little too Deadpool-y then before there was.
I could go into it, but at this point, I don't feel like kicking a movie.
Yeah. Well, he does, right? He blows his own brains out at the end of
He has fallen on the sword the same way George Clooney has with regards to Batman. Yeah. And there's just not enough there to really hate.
Sure.
It's just a nothing of a thing, you know, and it is a shame that they spent so much money. It feels like a marketing campaign in search of a movie, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So no hidden treasure here, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's too bad.
Swing and a miss, but you know, the kids liked it. My 8-year-old was on board. My 10-year-old was like, that was okay, like, you know, with a high pitched Jay Leno style.
yeah.
So I don't think he was sold on it.
Yeah. Okay.
I know that on HBO Max they're doing a Green Lantern series.
Oh, okay.
And I'm very curious to see if that sort of learns from the mistakes of the film. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I could go into, you know, a whole treatise about everything they did wrong. You know, but you know, the fact that it didn't perform is not in the least bit surprising. You know, I think it does to me show what even in the early days of the MCU what they were doing right.
You know, now I'm a little curious. It, like you say, it's become sort of a punching bag. Is that? You're saying it's sort of nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, does it have reason to be loathed, or is it just, it's one of the few superhero movies in this time frame that hasn't stuck the mark, so it's just become the one we pick on?
You know, so much of the discourse these days is everything is either the best or the worst.
Exactly. Yes.
Right. And I think that comes into play a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there have obviously been worse superhero movies, but there have also been far, far, far more that are better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was the same year. This is 2011. So you had X-Men First Class, you had Thor, you had Captain America, the First Avenger, like right there, three movies that are wildly better, you know?
Right.
So, it was a complete excavation for me because I had very little memory of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mark Strong is fantastic in it. I'll say that.
Five guys in it. Is this the one with the Skarsgård?
Sarsgaard.
Sarsgaard. Sorry.
Sarsgaard.
Yes. Yes. And his head's growing bigger.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah. He's also in the Batman, by the way.
Oh, really? I like him.
His head does not grow bigger in the Batman. there is that. So that was Green Lantern. And then here's another thing. You know, after my wife and I finished our ER and then our NYPD Blue rewatch, we're kind of in the mood for like another 90s show. And I was like, well, we did Doctors, we did Cops. Let's do Lawyers. So we're doing The Practice.
Yeah, okay.
We're ticking off the various TV professions.
Uh-huh.
And this is, of course, the David E. Kelly series. You're at least familiar with it, I'm assuming. And man, it is so 90s. I'm loving every minute of it. You know, it's like it's like the most 90s show that ever 90s the 90s.
Like their suits? Are they like,
yeah, just everything, you know, the topics, you know, and it's, I would not put it at the same level as either of the previous shows that we went through, because those are like touching rarefied air, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I mean, you can see why David E. Kelly, he's got his niche, you know, like, his particular brand of programming, and it works, you know, and this is, I believe this exists in like the same universe as Ally McBeal.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. So there's
crossovers?
They did a crossover, is my recollection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a while there where David A. Kelly was like kind of astride the TV landscape, you know?
Right.
Because he had Boston Public and Picket Fences and all that stuff, remember?
Yeah, I mean, he was, like a Shonda Rhimes.
Yeah, right.
He was back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He was doing that. Yeah. So I've been enjoying that. And then I should mention, you know, they have brought back the original Law & Order.
Yes. Yeah. How was that?
Oh, O'Brien. I'm so happy. I can't even tell you. You know, I posted my review, you know, I reviewed it for the paper, and Maddie Amazing, who follows the show, he tweeted at me. He said, I saw the ad for the new Law & Order during the Super Bowl, and I thought to myself, this is Zachy's Super Bowl.
You're right.
It's like, man, I love that our listeners know us, you know?
I know.
And seriously, like, I you know this, I love the original Law & Order so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy it's back, and it's pretty much exactly the same thing. The first episode involves a Bill Cosby-esque figure.
Wait, okay, so forgive me, because how can I possibly be your friend if I have to ask this? But was Law & Order the one that was always, like, ripped from the headlines?
Yeah, well, that's all of them to some extent.
Yeah, right. I remember, like, even the ads they would state.
Like,
right?
SVU is the one where, you know, it's the sex crime. So it involves people being penetrated in various ways, and you get it here.
Yeah, that one gets a little intense.
You can't watch too many of those in a row, you know?
Yeah. Actually, you know, it's funny. I was doing something in the office, and I had the TV on, and a Law & Order was starting. And I was like, oh, okay. And then it was getting really grisly, and I was like, wait, is this? And I saw it was SVU. I was like, oh!
Yeah, but OG Law & Order, that's like Pringles, man. You can just have a whole bunch.
Yeah.
So the first episode of season 21 involves a famous entertainer who is accused of assaulting 40 women.
Right.
And he went to jail, and then he got released due to like a bureaucratic foul up.
Okay.
So very Bill Cosby-esque.
Uh-huh. Does he resemble Bill Cosby?
In that he's like an older black guy, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, but it's pretty clear what they're doing. But this is all the cold open where he's released from jail and he's free, and then they find him shot in the dick, and then the music starts.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, exactly. But it's kind of crazy, cause, you know, they brought back Anthony Anderson, who was on the who was on the original show during its last few seasons, and you know, he did Blackish in the middle there.
Right. So is that done?
That's done. He like ended Blackish, and he just went right over to Law & Order. Back.
And he's also doing To Tell the Truth, so he's a busy man.
Yeah, that's right. And then they brought back Sam Waterston, who I just found out this past week is the father of Catherine Waterston.
Yeah, you told me that. And I would have never even thought to make that connection.
I know. I don't know how that never occurred to me, but I find that now that I know, like, I can't unsee it because she has a resemblance. But I'm happy as a clam, Brian, because it's one of my all time favorite shows, and it's back.
I'm so glad. You know, and I didn't really watch it much, but then you introduced me to it, and it was one of those things where they're just so addictive.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they'll do marathons of them on TNT or whatever it is. And, you know, I've marathoned them with you, right? And you just want to keep going because they're so satisfying. They're little puzzles. And then when they figure it out and it all comes together, it's very satisfying. So then you're like, well, give me another mystery. You know, it's like, they're like little hits. So I completely get it.
It's interesting how it is so completely episodic, and yet it is so completely bingeable, which should not be the case, right?
I don't know how to put it. It's almost like, I mean, that's what it is for me, is it's just, you're leaning forward trying to figure something out. And then there's always like a little twist, or it's very satisfying when someone has the aha moment and then calls out the villain, and it's, you know, you just feel sort of invigorated by the end of it, and you're just ready to do it again. Cause it's, you know, it's only 40 some minutes.
That's right. Yeah. So that's where I'm at with my viewing lately.
I'm glad whoever wrote the cha-chung is it's time for them to get another boat.
It's well, and I mean, think about Dick Wolf, this guy.
Yeah.
Like between Law and Order and Chicago and FBI.
Wow.
He owns about 60% of the primetime landscape.
Right, yeah.
Right. And it is interesting because in this age of peak TV, you're sort of seeing this migration, right? Because the prestige stuff tends to go to cable or streaming. And so what does that leave for broadcast? It leaves procedurals and episodics.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you've got, there's three Law and Order shows, there's three Chicago shows, there's however many FBI shows.
Mm-hmm.
That's all Dick Wolf.
Wow.
And then there's like two or three 911 shows, and then there's the Grey's Anatomy. I mean, that's what broadcast dramas have become, which I think is kind of interesting. Right. It's the great sorting.
What do you mean sorting? What do you mean?
Like the prestige procedural. The prestige.
Oh, I see.
Peak TV stuff is on cable and streaming.
Yeah. Yeah,
and people are going to network for the comfort food.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm always intrigued when I see a billboard coming to NBC, a new doctor show. It's either going to be a doctor or a lawyer show, right?
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, how did they sell this one? And it's like he's a doctor, but he's a vampire. There's just always some little hook, but they're a doctor, and.
Remember
it's
that
kind of
one
fascinating.
From a few years ago, the doctor with the evil face on his hands, or the billboard.
I think that's what I'm thinking of subconsciously. Yeah,
I forget what it was called, but yeah.
I don't know. I'd really love to watch those pitches, because they must get doctor lawyer shows all day long.
Cops,
so what's
lawyers, doctors.
Yep. Yeah.
Anyway.
But some people cracked it and they paved the way. And so that's Law and Order. Everybody's chasing Law and Order, right?
Basically, I mean, again, you have to imagine between the new shows and the reruns, Dick Wolf just has deposits made into his checking account like every minute of the day.
I can't even fathom.
Right.
Yeah. All the reruns, all the channels that it's on. Yeah.
Yeah. It's bananas.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, let's take a short break and then let's dip into the mailbag because we've got quite a bumper crop of letters. All righty. So, we mentioned our Dark Knight commentary, Dark Knight Rises, and I have to say this one has drawn quite a bit of feedback from our listeners, which I'm obviously very grateful for.
Yeah, that was really fun to see.
More than normal.
Yeah, yeah.
Normal being zero, so this is like one, and that's more than
thanks,
normal.
Dad.
No, actually, we got quite a few messages, so I wanted to share some of these. So this is from Jeremy Lloyd, and he says, "Hey guys, listening to your Dark Knight Rises commentary, and you guys mentioned the absence of the Joker. I've never read it, but apparently there's a reference to him in the novelization. If I remember right, it's from a Selina Kyle monologue where she says, all the inmates in Blackgate and Arkham were released by Bane except for one lone inmate in Arkham, which I think tracks with the movie. If you think about it, the Joker is the one guy Bane wouldn't want running around."
I like that.
I think that's like a great way of explaining his absence in the film. Like you don't need to explicate that.
Yeah. Yeah,
but certainly, yeah. If the Joker is all about chaos, obviously that's the exact opposite of what Bane wants to worry about.
And it's funny because I like having that in my head canon, but I can imagine if there was a line in the film, it's all you'd be thinking about.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Is he going to get out? Maybe he's going to be the thing that makes it all fall apart. Right.
It would be like, it's like, Bane has this whole thing all figured out, and then the Joker shows up and he's like, "Hey, what are we doing? What's going on?" It would be like when Pooh Bear shows up at Rabbit's house. Rabbit being Bane in this analogy,
right?
But now I want to see that. I want to see somebody Photoshop that.
Yeah,
Bane as Rabbit or Rabbit.
That's
as
Rabbit.
Thank you for that.
That's cool to know, though. Yeah, thanks for that.
Here is a comment from Rob Kelly, who says, very much enjoyed this commentary. I remember walking out of The Dark Knight Rises feeling a little disappointed. It all felt too big and chaotic. I haven't seen the film since, but maybe, like Zachy talked about, it's time for reappraisal, free from expectations. That said, I was disappointed that we never got to see John/Robin Blake as a new Batman. That ending left me feeling giddy. It was previewing something truly new in all of Batman lore, really. And I would have voted for a fourth Batman in this universe in a heartbeat. A Batman building upon the ashes of the old, but free of the pain and misery. Sign me up.
Hmm. I mean, yeah, with wholly different motivations. Whoa, that's not even a pun with him being Robin. Wholly different motivations. But yeah, no, I'd get down with that.
I think, as I said in our track, you know, what it sort of burned me that the movie was essentially discarding the role of Dick Grayson in all of it.
Right.
And I had a hard time getting past that.
Right.
How dare you? How dare you replace Dick Grayson with John Blake? You know,
yeah.
Who's this Blake? We want Dick. Right. Is what I kept repeating to random people on the street. Give me Dick, I said, as they walked a little faster.
Yeah, yeah.
While avoiding eye contact.
And then I run up to you and I'm like, tell someone, I'm like, thank you for calling me. Zachy, come on. Hey, let's go back. I'm going to take you home.
But yeah, I mean, I'm actually of the, you know, what's funny about this is such a random thing. I remember, back in, must've been 2013 or 14. I interviewed Joseph Gordon-Levitt for a movie that he directed. And what was the name of that movie? I think it's called Don John.
Yes. Right. Yeah. With Scarlett Johansson.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I was in a roundtable interview and I went in, I was like, I know one of y'all going to be like, are you going to be in the next Batman? You
right,
know?
Right.
And of course, so somebody was like, so, is there any chance you're going to be Nightwing? Or somebody said something stupid. And I remember his reaction. He just played it like, I don't know what that is. Like,
oh, really?
It's very funny. Like, he was very charming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But very like, no, I'm not answering those questions anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I just made a movie.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, that's kind of the thing is when you do these type of franchise things, especially, you know, these big superhero things, it like forever you have to answer that, you know?
Oh, right, right.
I was thinking about that. Like Ben Affleck will be 75 and people are like, so you're going to come back as Batman?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep. Yeah.
He's done, but he's never truly done, you know?
Yeah. Well, and now, I mean, when we have Michael Keaton 30 plus years coming back, I mean, that's, we know, right, it can happen. So
it can't, the possibility exists. That's true.
Yeah. So Affleck's got at least 30 years of people asking.
That's right. He gave an interview recently where he talked about how, like, doing Justice League, and I would assume specifically it was the reshoots, how it just broke something inside him.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that.
Right. And where he's like, you know, I'm in the middle of this and I'm like, you know, I don't like this. I don't like any of this. I don't like any of what's happening. And I was like, you know, you got to respect that.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice if you're in a position to, you can do that.
Like Michael Keaton, obviously he's having a moment right now. I mean, he just won the SAG award for Dope Sick and he's such a well-regarded actor. And so you wonder if for him coming back after this many years, it's like, it's gravy.
Mm,
he's,
sure.
You know, like he's proven everything he needs to prove, right? There's no one... Like he's
right.
not, he, it's an interesting thing because he will never not be Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's ever been embarrassed by it. He's always embraced it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Didn't he do that at a graduation speech?
Yeah, exactly.
He like closed with I'm Batman.
Right. And like, yeah. You know, when you think about it, like, I mean, Adam West, notwithstanding, he always gets to be the first.
Right. 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 Right.
Like no one can ever take that away from him.
Right.
But, you know, it's been long enough now where he's generally regarded as one of our great actors now.
Right, right.
Current actors. And so he's like, well, yeah, sure, go back and do this thing. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, by the way, did you hear about Beetlejuice 2 being spoken about again?
Yeah. Apparently Brad Pitt's company is producing it.
Yeah. Just kind of crazy.
You know what?
Development. I'm pretty sure it's what it said. So, I mean, that means people are thinking about it.
It's been in development hell for a long time. So we'll see. But right. that being said, yeah, if Tim Burton wants to do it.
Dude, I would love nothing more than for Tim Burton to make a Tim Burton movie again.
Yes.
You know, not a Tim Burton-fied Disney story or a Tim Burton-fied fairy tale. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I want a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, I don't think you do a Beetlejuice movie if Tim Burton doesn't want to do it, right? Like,
I mean, yeah, right? I mean,
why even bother? Then again, I would have said that about Indiana. Yeah,
you know, I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, if you got Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah. What's funny, yeah, I mean, these announcements, you have to always take them with a grain. Yeah. We talked in our last episode about the new Star Trek. And, like, apparently that announcement that the cast was coming back was news to the cast.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
they're like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. Well, that was in an investors meeting, right? So I'm sure that was, yeah.
Although, you know, I saw an interview with Zoe Saldana within the last few days, and they asked her about that. And she's like, we're really excited to be coming back. And, you know, she was mentioning it, not in, oh, well, we'll see. So it seems like, I hope that it's moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking, like, if there's no deal set, then Paramount basically sacrificed whatever leverage they might have had.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Right? They're like, because now it's like, okay, well, you know, give us what we're owed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I am all about holding up the studios for money if you are the talent.
Sure.
I'm a firm believer in, you know, like, just as we're talking, you know, they just, you know, they're bringing back Futurama.
I was thinking this very thing. Yeah.
This is like the eighth time they're bringing it back. But they announced this revival a few weeks ago, and John DiMaggio, who plays Bender, was not among those included in the returnees.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they were offering some amount, and he's like, no, I don't want that. Right. So they're like, fine, we're going ahead without you. And it generated such an uproar, the idea that they would recast Bender, that eventually they came back and they, you know, they came to terms.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that. I'm like, you know what? Good.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, I mean, if he's willing to let the parade go by, then good for him. Like, standing on principle, because guess what? The studios are not on your side in that regard. They'll roll over you. Because, you know, you're just a commodity, you know?
Yeah. I know this isn't a real underdog story, but years ago when the Simpsons actors were renegotiating their contracts, you know, and it's hard for them to make a case when they're like, well, we're getting millions and we want more millions. But at the same time, I was like, no, I mean, you do the math. Like, what is that show making you a year or whatever it is for 30 years now. And it's like, it's those people. I mean, those are the people that are doing the thing. Like you don't have the thing without those people. So, I mean, it only makes sense. And I was sort of like, yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's a hard argument to relate to, but at the same time, I'm like, hey, pay them. You know, that's what they're worth. It's absorbent, but that's what they're worth.
That's exactly right. Like if you're Harry Shearer, well, shit, any of them actors on The Simpsons, I mean, they've got enough money that they could stop doing that show tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, whatever, right?
Right.
So, hey, you want me? Give me what I'm worth.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, that's a healthy mentality to have. Sorry, I don't, you know, like, we should be cognizant of our value in the marketplace.
You know what's funny? You're reminding me of a real life story. I went into a job. I was unemployed for several months. And then I was offered a job, went in, and I just had so little experience. I mean, I was doing all these movie gigs, you know, where you just kind of, it is what it is, right? And this was one of the first jobs where I was getting like a steady salary. And I didn't really know about negotiating. I didn't research what this sort of position offered. It was sort of a surprise I was being offered it at all. Mm-hmm. And I went in and I was getting paid so badly.
Hmm, wow.
And it was one of those things where I someone asked me, they're like, well, what'd you negotiate? I mean, this is embarrassing now, but it's a good life lesson. I was like, negotiate?
Yeah.
And so I did my research, saw that I was being woefully underpaid for what I was doing. And I actually brought it up to the bosses. But I had all the research and the information, and I said, this is the average of what this position pays. And this is, you know, this, that, whatever. And they ended up bumping it up. So, I mean, the smart thing to do is to go in prepared and not be afraid to ask for what you're worth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think of this all the time and still even cringe at how poorly I handled that. But I think I'm glad you actually brought it up, because I think it's a really great lesson. If one person is hearing this, it's going to make them ask for it better.
I've had this discussion, you know, people message me sometimes about, you know, writing and, you know, how much they should quote people and whatever. And I always say, like, well, quote whatever you feel comfortable, but are you okay with losing the job if you don't get what you're asking for? That's the only thing you want to ask yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to stand on that principle? If you are, then make your case, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But certainly for me, you know, and this partly I've just been doing this long enough now where, like, yeah, I have a rate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and occasionally I'll go lower if it's a friend or if it's a favor. But you know what? I don't need to write for exposure.
Right.
That's bullshit. I know that.
Right.
You know, so if you're not going to pay me my rate, yeah, no, I'm not interested. No, thank you.
Right.
You know, and I again, it's know your place in the scheme of these things, you know, because you if you don't value yourself, other people won't.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean you should be like Vin Diesel style, you know, in love with the smell of your own farts. Just have a healthy sense of where you fit into things, you know?
100%. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, hey, here's another letter.
Yeah.
So this is from Doug O'Loughlin, who also in response to our Dark Knight Rises commentary, says, good commentary. I've posted on here before, but I have a soft spot for this movie. I'd been laid off from a corporate job and found a new position, ready to start the following Monday. So my kid was at school and I went to see it in the middle of the day. Just captivating to see Bruce Wayne kind of hit rock bottom. Good discussion. I do agree there's something going on tonally, and it would have been better to A, have him tired from fighting the cops since the end of The Dark Knight. This is what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Or Batman. And rather than like, oh, he just stopped. And B, split it up into two movies. Yep. I imagine that just wasn't a thing back then. Three good movies were an accomplishment enough already.
Yeah, I mean, those are your pitches. And I, especially with time, I completely see them. I'm totally on board with I would like to see Batman is now in a pinch. And it's making it impossible to do his job. I think that's a really interesting way to start out the story. But yeah, two movies thing, you really sold me when you were like, no, you split it right here, and this is where it would pick up. I was like, yeah, I think you're right.
I totally feel that. Because that's the point where I said to split it, which is right when right in the aftermath of Batman's fight with Bane, it allows you to add more meat to that film, you know, which then would pay off the next one.
Yeah.
And it definitely, it feels like just a thing that would be done pro forma now.
Yeah.
But yeah, back then there was like, no, we got to wrap it up. Trilogy.
Yeah.
we need to get out of trilogy thinking. I've thought about this.
Oh man. Yeah. 100%.
Like tell me that this, Star Wars, latest batch of films would not have benefited from being like five movies instead of three.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I get sort of the symmetry of it all, but I don't know, just do what your story wants.
Yeah, there's that.
it's funny. Another thing I'm seeing lately is a miniseries that should have just been a 2-hour movie. I'm seeing people speaking about that, like the, I forget what it's called, Winning Time, maybe? That new Lakers series.
Oh, yeah.
On HBO. I haven't seen it, but I read a review where they were like, yeah, maybe this could have been a movie.
You know? I'm hearing that. I'm hearing a lot of that. Just in reference to that, in other things where I saw something really interesting. Somebody said this online. I wish I could remember, but by turning a lot of these stories into miniseries because of sort of feeding the content gods at these streaming series, it robs these stories of the focus and sort of immediate, you know, impact of a film.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about that with, like, you know, one of the movies I watch all the time, I screen it for my students, is Spotlight.
Right.
Which I absolutely love. And it feels like, but for a few years, that too would have been a miniseries. Right?
100%.
Right?
Yep.
And yet I think that movie works because it just, it packs so much, emotion into this 2-hour thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's weird how we're in this age now where, you know, what we used to say back then is like, man, if only they turned this into a series, you'd have more breathing room. And now it's like the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're never happy. That's just, human beings are never
bottom
happy.
Line.
I definitely, I'm seeing the ads for The Dropout.
This
about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos.
Oh, yes. Amanda Seyfried.
With Amanda Seyfried. Yeah. And Naveen Andrews, by the way, from
Lost. Yeah.
And that totally looks like it would have probably worked better as a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. You know? I mean, it worked as a documentary that was feature length. So
yeah. That's right. Yeah. So yeah, that is kind of interesting. It's just, you know, in 10 years since The Dark Knight Rises came out, the entire storytelling economy has changed so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've talked on this show before about Snyder's Justice League and, you know, what the version that was released ended up being the peak version of that movie.
Mm.
The 4-hour cut.
Right.
That would not have hit theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, because of the streaming, it ended up being sort of the best version of itself, in my opinion.
Which also reminds me of Batman v Superman. That was like the director's cut. I remember enjoying that's that right. more, but it was not something that, you know, traditionally a length that a movie, you know, like a studio would want to release a movie.
Yeah. And you know, that's that, you know, this happened with Watchmen too, where the director's cut was substantially better, in my opinion.
Right, right.
Right? So with both of these films, with Batman vs. Superman and Watchmen, I think Snyder kind of got in his own way a little bit, where he made a superior director's cut, but if it's made for the theatrical, like both of those movies suffered theatrically, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you get to say, oh, but the don't worry, the director's cut is better.
Yeah, right.
You get what I'm saying? Like with Lord of the Rings, right? Like the theatrical version had the goods already. I mean, in my opinion, the extended versions are better, but they were already good.
Right.
I'm not making a judgment about either Watchmen or BVS, but I mean, we know how they played theatrically. Neither of those played the way Warner Brothers would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, why not make sure that you pack the meaty bits into the theatrical version?
Which, I mean, do you think that's how we got a 3-hour Batman movie? Seeing that there's an appetite for this?
I think so. You know, and I think Matt Reeves had the pull to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they came to him again and again. I'm sure he negotiated a situation. He's like, look, I'm going to make the movie I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
I read a quote from him where he said that for the most part, they left the movie alone.
Hmm.
I guess there was one piece where they were like, can you cut that? It might be scary. Hmm. And he said, no, I'm leaving it in. And he made his movie, you know?
Wow.
So, I mean, I feel bad for Snyder.
Yeah.
Because I do think he got done dirty.
Yeah, for sure.
But that being said, I mean, both of those films, Watchmen and Batman vs. Superman, the extended versions are better. They're objectively better. So you say, well, why not find a way to pack that stuff in so that the extended version adds more to it, but you've got the meat and potatoes already there.
Right.
There's a whole thing in BVS about Clark Kent, like doing this investigation and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's like really compelling.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
It's absent from the theatrical cut, you know?
Yeah.
That stuff, I don't know. And I'm not saying that was even his decision. I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure the studio got involved.
Right.
But, Again, going back to what I was saying before about his Justice League. Well, there's no way a 4-hour cut would have hit theaters.
No.
So we'd be having this exact conversation, but it's like, no, that's it. That's the prime version of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 hours, good.
Yeah. It's kind of cool too, though. I mean, with all the eras I've lived through, I mean, I can't imagine getting that version. Forget about the campaigns and all that. But I mean, the first director's cut I ever remember seeing was Terminator 2.
Huh.
And that was such a novelty. It was this special VHS thing where there was two tapes, right? Yeah. You know, and there was the regular one and the one that had the extra scenes in it. And I didn't even know you could do that, right? And I'm sure people didn't even know that existed. It was like this weird box at Suncoast Video, you know, that didn't look like the other ones. But it's just now it's so, I mean, you can get it on the streaming service that you already subscribe to, or, you know what I mean? It can be beamed into your house. It's so easy to not only know these things exist, but to get access to them. So it's pretty cool. This moment allows for that.
Yeah. It's an amazing time, and it's just wasted on people who just, you know, it is exhausting. It's exhausting to be upset about everything all the time. I'm sort of fascinated by people's propensity to just get worked up into a lather about this type of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a young man's game.
It is a young man's game. It really is. There was a time, you know, I do think about this. I'm so glad there was no social media when the Star Wars prequels were coming out.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yeah. No, what, dude. Definitely.
I might have posted on a message board or something, you know, maybe. I don't even remember, but like, I'm glad there's none of that.
Just my unfiltered.
Yeah.
Wienery
being
20-year-old,
exactly.
Know. Yeah.
Oh man! Thank goodness for small blessings.
Yeah.
Here's a note that we got from Filippo Fava, and I have the same question, Brian. He says, "Apologies, Zach and Brian. Are you planning a 2021 in review? Uh-huh. I'm always interested to hear your best of list for the year. By the way, the podcast is the best show on the air." Well, thank you for that.
Thank you.
You and Brian are amazing. When my children watch Puppy Dog Pals, I always exaggerate the truth and tell the kids I know one of the writers.
Well, you do, right?
We're like, if you are a regular listener to the show, I consider you a friend.
Yeah, we're all sitting at the same table here.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
This is the lunch table where we're just talking about cool stuff.
I say that all the time too. I know the writer, and they're like, "Shut up, Dad." It doesn't.
That means a lot to me.
Well, as far as doing a best of, I'm going to go ahead and say 2021 may have gotten away from us.
You know, it's funny. I enjoy doing those too, and I think we didn't do it the previous year.
We didn't do a 2020
because it was so weird.
Yes.
And then, this year it just kind of, I don't know. We fell out of step or something. But I'd be happy. Actually, I did make a little list just in case. I don't have it right now, but I mean, just as like a little thing at the beginning, just to kind of run them down. I'd be happy to do that.
That may be something that we want to do at some point.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think I would fully expect hope. Well, you know, knock on wood that there isn't like the next variant that sends us all back inside again. But you know, next year, kind of, you know, as we get back to normal, we'll kind of do our thing again.
Yeah. You know, having said that, the list I made, usually it's about 10, right? I think the one I made for last year was like 5, you know, 5 that I felt really, you know, solid about, but
yeah. I don't have a list now that I think of it. Matrix Resurrections is on there. I'll say that. That was in my, but I'm in a minority on that one. Clearly.
Yeah. It's your list, but that's why it's your list.
That's right.
That's why it's so much fun to listen to.
That's right.
Yeah.
So screw all y'all who didn't like that movie. All you wrong people who didn't like Matrix Resurrections. This is a letter we got from Corey Hebein, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
And this is directed at you specifically. He says, "The goodly wife and I just finished the latest episode, which is the Uncharted one, and need to point out something that we noticed. Not sure if Brian had an additional cup of coffee or soda or just was overtired, but Brian had an insane amount of energy and such unbridled enthusiasm that he just stole the episode. Normally, Zachy takes the lead and controls the discussion, but not this time. For the entire 2 hours, Brian was so energetic that we were so engaged in everything he had to say and had smiles on our faces the whole time. It was great! Especially at the end during the Uncharted talk. We loved Brian's multiple sidetracks upon sidetracks upon sidetracks. It reminded me of Permanent Midnight, anytime Ben Stiller was pitching or ranting. Additionally, throughout the episode, Brian said the word bombastic 3 times and 1 bastic. We can't be the only ones that noticed and would encourage other listeners to write in and confirm the same occurrence that we experienced. Also, if there was a catalyst that got that hamster racing on the wheel in that Brian head, we highly recommend that he make it a recording tradition, as this episode was so entertaining. Oh, and Zachy was good, too. Thanks, Corey, for that.
Thank you, Corey.
Well, what people don't realize is that in the aftermath of the episode, after we finished recording, Brian started weeping and singing, "I'm so excited."
And that, I just, you know what? You're not far off. I mean, that was what I was going through, minus the speed. But yeah, or caffeine tablets or whatever she was taking. I was at the end, I think, of like a 12-day in a row stretch of working, like from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed. And so I think I think it just all kind of came to a head where there was a movie. It was so funny. I was so Jekyll and Hyde about that movie too, which is still how I feel about it. It's like, it's just a sort of generic soon to be TBS Saturday afternoon movie. It's all right, says Hyde. As an Uncharted, you know, based on the Uncharted games and knowing what it could be, you know, Jekyll has different feelings. So I think I was so tired. The filter was off and I was literally just saying any stupid, not stupid, but just anything that passed from my brain to my mouth. Whereas usually I have a little bit of a filter. So I think that's what that was. But I'm so glad that Corey and his wife enjoyed it.
After we wrapped, Brian was like, "I'm so... it's so scared." And it made for a very special moment.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? It's worth noting too. Someone else, I think, wrote about this. That was the day where I was like, hey, you know, normally I'm cooped up in a closet, literally with a door keeping, or a table keeping the door shut. I'm just truly trapped in a little cave. And that was the first day I tried to get out of there with a new situation. And I had this mic set up and I was going to try and make it work. And I didn't realize this, but when I hit record, it wasn't doing my mic setup. It was recording from my laptop. So it sounded terrible. And someone, I think, wrote in, cause I mentioned it. I was like, I'm trying a new recording setup. And I forgot who it was, but someone wrote to you and was like, yeah, I don't know if you want to tell Brian or not, but, it did not sound good.
And I said, back in the closet with you.
I know. I did. And I had a different setup for Dark Knight Rises. I tried the whole bed situation like you, which I think that room has the best acoustics. And now I'm back in the office with a whole different setup trying something else out. So we'll get there.
It was disappointing because Brian made such a big show about coming out of the closet. And then
I know. I had to march myself right back
just
in.
Just get right back in there. Yeah. No Time Magazine cover for you, Brian.
No, I'm not going back. I'm out. I'm
going. He's out and proud.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is, I can tell, I feel, you know, like my shoulders are resting easy. I'm not cramped and, you know, I don't have clothes, like the sleeves of clothes on my head, you know, like, I don't know.
I just want to say, I supported you when you were in the closet. I support you when you're out of the closet. That's what friends do, man.
That's what good waffles do. Yeah.
Hey, here's a letter we got from Keith in New Hampshire. He says, hi, guys. I'm a little behind on catching up, and I'm currently listening to the Matrix Resurrections episode. Mm-hmm. Early on, you discussed the term gaslight in regards to being right. The Ricardos. The word has gotten traction over recent years for obvious and unfortunate reasons, but there is a 1944 film titled Gaslight starring Ingrid Bergman and directed by George Cukor. Maybe it comes and goes depending on the times. Gaslight would have been released around 10 to 15 years before Being the Ricardos took place. Anyways, just wanted to mention that. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Keith, for that. And yeah, this is in reference to when we were talking about Being the Ricardos, there's a line where Lucy says, "Stop gaslighting me."
Yeah.
And I believe we said, like, that's an acronym.
Right.
anachronistic, I should say. Let me finish that word. I should mention this. I have, I just got these, you know, Invisalign.
Yes, yes.
I just started that treatment.
Okay.
So I have these trays in my mouth. And so it's, I mean, I'm glad to be able to fix my teeth and stuff. Not that they're like super jacked up, but you know, get whatever get gaps and stuff. But, but I've had to like retrain my tongue.
Oh, to not
to
touch
to,
them.
Yeah. And to like enunciate extra.
Oh, hard. Really?
So like I've found that I have to work my way through words differently.
Wow. That's so interesting. It's not the same at all, but I had a crown, my first crown put in.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
And when they're having the porcelain tooth being made, you have 2 weeks with this temporary crown and it's this sort of rough texture. And I found for 2 weeks straight, my tongue did not leave that tooth.
That's because it's something different, you know?
Yeah. It's so weird how it just, you don't want to, but you just do. And thank goodness. I mean, once I got the porcelain thing, I don't know.
Yeah, have to think
about it at all. Yeah.
But anyway, so
yeah. This is very like welcome.
This is like
the fireplace,
the revelatory episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the what we mentioned is that felt like an anachronism, and I still feel like I know about the George Cukor film, but the usage of gaslight in the way in which it's used, the modern usage. I feel like that's a recent phenomenon. So I could be wrong about that, but it does feel like that the way it's being used, even though it is a reference to that film, that I don't think that was spoken about that way back then.
It definitely, that is really interesting to know though. I'd be kind of curious to just look into this film. Just
have you curious. Seen, like I've seen the specific clips.
Oh, I haven't. No, but yeah, I was going to say, it's just hard. It's such a hot button word, hot button, not the right word, but it's just a word that comes up a lot.
Yes.
Right. In often in heated sort of things. And so I think it pricked your ear a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, every other week when we discuss the editing, I'll be like, don't gaslight me, Brian. I mean, right. We use it all the time.
Yeah. 100%.
We're just not used to hearing Lucy Ricardo say it.
That's right. Oh, did you see there's going to be a documentary by Amy Poehler?
Yeah, I saw the trailer and it looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? The Being the Ricardos thing, I was not much of a fan of it. Mm-hmm. And I saw a friend and he's like, oh, I watched Being the Ricardos. And I was like, ugh, yeah, I know, right? And he's like, oh, I kind of liked it. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. And then Federica, we're... and I were having dinner with her cousin and her husband, and she said something about Being the Ricardos. I was like, oh man, I know, huh? And she's like, oh, actually we both enjoyed it. I was like, well, all right. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
Yeah. It's, that's, it definitely is a, I realize as I'm saying it sounds bad the way I'm saying it. Like it's like a down the middle movie.
Yeah.
And that sounds really condescending, and I don't mean it that
no,
way.
No, I really think that it's you're either on board with it or you're not. And
yeah.
I couldn't get on board with it, but I'm glad people did.
Yeah, you know, as an Aaron Sorkin fan and a I Love Lucy fan, I certainly wanted nothing more than to love it.
Right.
But you know, unfortunately that's just how it is. You know?
Yeah.
But hey, I'm the guy who doesn't mind The Rise of Skywalker. So what do I know? You know, I think I mentioned this to you in a previous episode. I'd posted online about how, you know, hey, I like Book of Boba Fett and Rise of Skywalker and you know, all their flaws notwithstanding, I still like them. Mm-hmm. And somebody, some rando was like, oh, you know, I know why you're saying you like it so that you can keep going to early screenings of Disney movies.
Right.
And I just read that and I'm like, you know what? I promise you, if I don't get to go to an early screening, I will totally be fine with it. Like,
yeah. I mean, obviously,
I'm not going to give something a positive review just so I can go, you know?
I was just going to say, I mean, you did you were talking about the Licorice Pizza screening where they set it up strictly for you.
Yeah.
And you weren't hot on it.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, yeah.
I mean,
you can't be broken.
Like, I mean, I've got my code, you know, where I won't review certain movies. If I'm interviewing talent, I don't do a review. You know, I have a certain thing, but
oh, yeah.
But I don't want to be in that position, you know?
Sure.
So those are just rules I've set up for myself, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely like, you know, I've been doing this a long time. There's not a lot of studio perks that I cared that enough about that I would ever like, you know, sacrifice my integrity over, you know?
Right. Right.
I just, that mentality, like maybe it's just, I don't know how old these people are.
Who say
stuff like that. Like maybe that's something you think when you're younger, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, look, this is my livelihood. Like I take it seriously. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's obviously, I feel this way about you and that's why we are friends and do the show, but that's what I like about you. I mean, you're a great writer and you write what you feel and you stick up for the things. I mean, with The Matrix, it's not a perfect example because people were kind of mixed on it, but like you dug your heels in, you're like, no, I love it. This is great. And you know, and if even people disagree with you, you stood by it. Right. I think your history shows that you love what you love and you're not afraid to say it.
And if I'm sucking on the Disney teat, then I'm not getting any nutrition out of that. That's like, I've not benefited from that at all.
Yeah.
People are like, you just want to go to those early Disney screenings. Yeah. I have five kids, but that's what prompts my decision making. Yes. Go to a movie 2 days early.
Right.
An idiot. Anyway. I mean, it's just I've gotten accused of that so often. You were bribed by Disney.
Yeah,
you're being bribed, and it's like, look, that I don't know what lifestyle you think film critics lead.
Yeah,
you know,
this is funny because this has happened to you. You know, where you say something and people drag you, and then just today, on my own, I was on Reddit. I don't know, looking up something. I don't even remember. And I stumbled across a post about someone that I like, that I know personally, but you know, like a podcast I listen to.
Yeah.
And it was about this person, a post that they made, and it had nothing to do with their show. It had nothing to do with anything. It was just randomly about this person. I happened to like their work. And it was just like 60 comments picking on this person for their opinion and how they feel about things. And I was like, wow, what a hateful thing. You
it's
know?
Weird, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, so you disagree, you know, like, I don't know, like then disagree, write something intelligent about it. Don't drag people, you know, say what you feel.
I mean, that's just the world we live in, I guess.
I guess,
you know, but anyway, hey, on that note.
Yeah, man. Thanks to everybody for writing in. And there were so many additional comments. And I, you know, going back to me being super, super busy, I actually wrote it down on my to-do list. I was like, I know it's going to be late, but so many people wrote in that I really wanted to read everything and not forget and to respond and just, you know, take it all in. And so that's what I did. Once I finally had some time, I went back to like things that were like 2 weeks old just because I wanted to read all of it. So it really means a lot to me. I know it means a lot to both of us. So thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, and thanks everybody for continuing to listen, and of course, for all the feedback that you give.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that coming, and you know, as I ask with each episode, please, if you like what you're doing, what we're doing, well, if you like what you're doing, then you keep doing that. You do you, Peaches. But if you like what we're doing, then you know, go to Apple Podcasts, leave a review, leave a star rating, spread the word, let people know what you think.
Yeah.
But that wraps up this episode. We're going to take a short break while Brian, you know, is traveling the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll be traveling vicariously through Brian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll send pictures of me pretending to hold up the Eiffel Tower or whatever. Whatever you do with the Eiffel Tower. I don't know what those pictures are. But I'm looking forward to finding out.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing them. And keep your questions and comments coming to us. You can email us at moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit like on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviefilmpodcast, and message us there. If you're looking for me online, you can find me on Twitter at Zacky's Corner. That's Z-A-K-I-S Corner. And it's also my website, just added.com. You can also look at the San Francisco Chronicle this coming week, where my piece looking back at 30 years of Batman the Animated Series should be posted by the time this episode goes up. So check that out. And what about you, Brian?
Puppy Dog Pals dropping every Friday. Season 5. I have the St. Patrick's Day episode coming up, I think, this week, which reminds me, I need to go get a Shamrock Shake.
There we go. Well, I'll let you get to that.
Yeah.
And we'll be back soon with our reactions to The Batman. So we hope you'll stick around for that.
Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Film Podcast. Podcast, enjoy the show. Zacky and Brian are talking about the movies. Movie Film Podcast on the radio.